Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
We've seen a very stormy regime across the Pacific Northwest, extending eastward to parts of the Northern Rockies. We've also seen dramatic improvement across the central and southern Great Plains, and that is reflected in our improving winter wheat conditions across that region.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey looking at drought coverage.
Also seeing big improvement in the Midwest and parts of the Mid-South. Now, it's not been quite equal opportunity improvement. There are a few areas that have turned worse over the last 5 weeks. Between October 29th and December 3rd, that five-week period featuring some drought deterioration or worsening conditions across the Deep South, from the Desert Southwest to Deep South Texas. Also, a few areas, a few pockets on the Northern Plains remain quite dry. And then we haven't quite seen much relief yet in the Northern and Middle Atlantic States.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The Corporate Transparency Act is a law that is that's set to go into full enforcement on January 1st, 2025.
Kent Backus with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
What this does is it requires certain businesses with 20 or fewer employees to report to the Secretary of State. This would be a requirement to disclose beneficial ownership information to the U.S. Treasury Department's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, also known as FinCEN. And failure to comply, failure to disclose that information, that can result in fines of $500 per day and up to 2 years in prison.
Why is it a concern?
This is something that was designed to go after money laundering. And it was really designed to go after Russian oligarchs and the Chinese Communist Party. Unfortunately, it's catching about 33 million American businesses in the crosshair. So this is something that NCBA has been trying to get. We've been trying to, you know, get this alert out to the countryside for the better part of a year. And, you know, we're getting really close to this deadline. And, you know, we're very concerned that, you know, once this thing actually goes live, you're going to have a lot of businesses that could be in trouble. So we've been working with Congress to try to get a delay. And, you know, I think we're going to try to work with the incoming administration to see what we can do to resolve this. But the Treasury Department is not backing away from it right now. Secretary Yellen, she's committed to moving forward with this.
But now there's been a recent development.
The U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Texas granted a nationwide preliminary injunction to halt the enforcement of the Corporate Transparency Act. So that means that it essentially would just hit pause until they could find out if this law is actually constitutional. So it's a preliminary injunction. The big question is, you know, will that actually hold? Because you have conflicting district court decisions around the country. In Oregon and in Virginia, you had two federal district courts that denied the petition for a preliminary injunction. And at the same time, you also have a case that is pending in the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals that would apply to just a certain number of plaintiffs. So there's a lot of legal uncertainty in this, and it looks like the government has already appealed this decision to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. So there's still a lot of uncertainty of whether this injunction will hold. So that's why we're encouraging people to continue to talk to your attorney, talk to your tax professionals, find out what is the best option for your business. Because with all this uncertainty, you want to make sure you have all your ducks in a row. Hopefully we can get some action on this, maybe not by the end of this year, but I mean, hopefully we can see something move forward, because unfortunately there's going to be a lot of small businesses who've done nothing wrong that are going to get caught up in the middle of this.
But be careful if you decide not to do this.
Yeah, it's a tremendous gamble. And unfortunately, I mean, the government has put your back against the wall. But if you're a small business with 20 or fewer employees, and if you file a business plan with the Secretary of State, then there's a pretty good chance that this could apply to you. But you need to take the initiative and talk to your tax preparer, talk to your attorney, find out what the best course of action is for you so that you don't get caught up in the middle of this.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
There are going to be some interesting changes.
Steve Detmer is Executive Vice President of the Agribusiness Freedom Foundation.
We have gotten a president second time around who understands a little bit better. I mean, he's a businessman. And of course, part of his charm, if you will, in dealing with the electorate has been he understands the working man. This is a guy who had to deal with contractors of all sorts, plus the mob probably, and God knows what all else in New York City, and did it for decades successfully. And that's given him an appreciation for the working man in the country, and that's been kind of important. He probably paid more attention to agriculture than a lot of people expected in the first term, and I think that will continue in the second one. We have unfortunately, but agriculture is one of the last picks that he made for his cabinet, and most of them are not terribly familiar with Ms. Rollins. But they say a lot of it has to do with the company you keep. And Linda McMahon, who was with the WWE for a long time, was chairman of the group that she's been involved with. Larry Kudlow was vice chairman, and she was executive CEO. And they are basically a bunch of people who worked in the first administration for Mr. Trump. And decided that, you know, there might be a second one, and they would keep the issues alive that are important, the principles that conservative people have been interested in. And so the organization that she's been working with, the America First outfit, has been a good influence on the politics, if you will, keeping some of those issues alive. And so as a conservative person who's involved in the principles, I think she will do a good job. It'll be interesting to see just our biggest concern with the USDA these days is the Dietary Goals Advisory Committee. I always forget whether they're called Dietary Goals or Dietary Guidelines. They've changed over the years, but they have been on the verge of saying, well, we don't recommend meat in the diet for the last decade or so, and they've taken that leap again this year. We don't know how much influence they're going to try and bring environmental concerns, climate change concerns in as they have in the last couple of years, which has not been favorable for us. But the dietary goals that set up nutrition guidelines for the school lunch program, for the military, and are set the parameters, if you will, for all the nutrition professionals in the country, they have been a concern for us, and that's part USDA and part HHS. And of course, we don't know exactly what RFK Jr. is going to concentrate on. We know he's going to be very interested in vaccines. We know he's not very happy with the way the pharmaceutical companies responded during the pandemic. I don't think he was happy with them before that, but that really was a major catalyst for him. And whether he gets confirmed or not, we need some people to counteract some of the things that the Dietary Goals Advisory Committee has come up with in recent years on both USDA and HHS side, so that we don't have so-called nutritional experts in Washington telling everybody that they shouldn't eat red meat.
This is Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Our family is a big independent hog producer in Iowa.
Matt Karstens, president and CEO of Landis.
There's 18 left in Iowa that are independent hog producers. When I was growing up, that was probably 3,500 to 4,000. And today we've got 18. Now, I don't stand or sit in front of you and in front of this beautiful fire we have and say I think that's going to happen on the land side, but it's going to be a pretty dramatic change. Our largest farmer in Iowa, when he came to my office, now probably just short of 2 years ago, was 35,000 acres. Today, he's over 60. Now, that's a family-ran business. Purest definition of family farm. His boys are all involved. His wife's involved. And then they employ a bunch of people. But it's coming. Do I like it? You know, on one hand, obviously no. But on the other hand, you know, we can't find workers. You know, it's just getting harder and harder by the day. You know, so is 60,000 in a state like Iowa or Illinois in your district, is that right? That's probably high. But I think there's two on his heels that also do a good chunk of business with us, three or four more behind them. And I would just caution you all to open your eyes. I don't think it'll be as fast as what we saw on the livestock side, but it's coming and we're watching it and we just can't see it. I mean, the numbers are staggering. Are those top 10 farmers of Landis, where they were 2 years ago, where they are today, blows your mind. And I think that's going to continue. You know, the thing we should fear is we got to make sure it's not foreign ownership, right? And that I think our governments, state and federal, are doing a better job of acknowledging, but I think we still have a long ways to go there. One of the biggest landowners, and this isn't a religious statement, it's just a fact, one of the biggest landowners we have in the Midwest is the Mormon Church. And, you know, is that good or bad? I don't know. You know, I just know it's happening, and we've got to open our eyes.
Which means suppliers will have to change as well.
We just started a new company that has a different path to the farmer. Think more Amazon or DoorDash. So this company is called Conduit. We just started it 6 months ago. We launched it on Bloomberg here in Chicago. And today it's got over $400 million. Of financing commitments from farmers. We're just starting our transaction to sell product to these farmers across the United States. And it's literally, it's the Amazon. Like you can, unlike Amazon, you actually call 618 Conduit and talk to a human, but that's it. You know, we're going to use satellites to scout your field if there's a problem. They can send us imagery. It is a new age way of thinking about ag retail and working with that farmer from agronomy and a grain perspective. So that office is based here in Chicago. We based it here, although I love Iowa, and I know Steph and others do, but we had to get where there was a population, you know, in the summer, nicest day in Des Moines, you know, you'll probably see 10, 12 people downtown Des Moines. We came here and there was, I don't know, 600, 700 walking by our place in the West Loop and out, you know, having dinner on a patio. It's not a place you would see a business like ours, right? In our building, there's John Deere, there's Snapchat. Across the parking lots, Google, McDonald's is over the way. Mondelez is in the neighborhood. But we have to be where people are. And then again, people that want to solve world problems, right? It's not a guy like me. All I know is ag, right? I grew up in Bagley, Iowa. That's population 150, if we're lucky. A big day was going to Des Moines, 60 miles away. Today, you know, we got to be in the third largest city to attract the right talent and solve some of these problems with different minds that are out there.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
When you look at our industry, you look at the U.S. cattle sector, it's very strong right now. Even though we still have the lowest herd numbers we've had in years, there's still strong demand for our product. And, you know, we have some of the best beef we've ever produced, and I think we're just going to continue to get stronger.
For fiscal year 2025, USDA is projecting the third year in a row of declining exports by value. Combined with continuously climbing imports, it's exacerbating an ag trade deficit. Kent Backus, National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
You need some long-term agreements. You need some long-term market access so that we can continue to fill a lot of that strong foreign demand. When you look at exports, they account for over $400 per head. We want to see that grow, not because we're not selling a ton of beef here in the U.S. market. We dominate this domestic market, but we want to get premiums on all cuts of the animal. And so we need to focus on improving our market access across Southeast Asia. There's a lot of potential in the Philippines and Vietnam. You look at some of the emerging markets in Africa, and you look at some of the outstanding issues we've had in Europe. But one thing that we've been really trying to, the message we've been trying to get across to the next administration is, you know, let's work with some of our allies and let's secure some strong trade agreements.
So what can the next administration focus on?
We think we should move forward with a robust trade agreement with the United Kingdom. They're strong allies. We think there's a lot of opportunity in their market. We feel confident about, you know, their product and the safety of their beef. So we wouldn't have any issues with that here. But at the same time, we need to be the ones that are out there negotiating these agreements and setting these terms of trade. Over the last 4 years, unfortunately, we've taken market access. We've taken the tariff reductions off of the table. And so consumers overseas continue to pay very high prices for our products. And it's not because that's what the market is driving. It's because those tariffs have marked it up and we're not meeting our full potential. So, we know that this next administration is going to take a very aggressive position on trade. And I think that'll kind of be a shock to a lot of folks who've seen it be kind of quiet over the last few years.
Now, declining exports by value, mostly still on sliding commodity prices, volumes of bulk commodities projected to stay steady year over year, but any projections made now still educated guesses.
Here we go. I mean, President-elect Trump has made it very clear that he wants to go after some markets. He wants to hold people accountable. But I think the unspoken part of that, too, is they want to see American businesses prosper. And the way you do that is by opening up these markets for our exports. You know, we talk a lot about Buy America, but we also need to talk more about Sell America. And I think there's a lot we can do, especially in the Asian markets and a lot of the other emerging markets that want high-quality U.S. beef. And we got to remove these trade barriers in order to get it to them. So we're excited about what the next year holds. We think there's going to be a lot of opportunities out there. And one thing's for sure, it won't be boring.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
RFA represents America's ethanol industry. We represent them in D.C. We keep track of what's going on in the markets. And we're their voice to the public and to policymakers.
Scott Richmond is chief economist at the Renewable Fuels Association. Could the industry finally get year-round E15?
Well, we're actually really hopeful that in the lame duck session of Congress, they'll go ahead and pass a bill that's been out there that's supported by the ethanol industry. It's actually supported by the American Petroleum Institute, to go ahead and allow nationwide year-round E15. The last few years, we've had emergency waivers from the EPA allowing E15 during the summer. This legislation would allow it permanently, and there's really no reason not to have it. If you look at the environmental aspects of ethanol, E15 is actually even a shade better on environmental metrics than E10, not to mention lowering greenhouse gas emissions. So it really makes sense to go ahead and allow E15 year-round. We're calling for it. The American Petroleum Institute is calling for it, and it just makes too much sense not to happen pretty quickly. We're actually, the federal government, through the Inflation Reduction Act, has been providing incentives for ethanol infrastructure for stations that can offer E15. And we're seeing a pretty substantial expansion in that number of stations. So that's what's helping to expand ethanol consumption domestically at the same time that we're having this year by far a record level of exports. So really we need both of those sources of demand. We need continued strong consumption domestically, and then we need to continue growing the export market.
We hear concerns about declining exports, but when it comes to the ethanol industry.
Yeah, it's actually been the real bright spot for this year. We're going to have by far a record level of exports. We're going to surpass the previous record by a couple of hundred million gallons. We're going to surpass 2023 levels by about 450 million gallons. So if you think about ethanol, one bushel of corn makes about 3 gallons of ethanol. You can do that math. It's been very helpful to the ethanol industry. It's been helpful to the corn market. And the major destinations are, the top destinations are Canada, the United Kingdom, the EU, and India. And what those countries have in common is that they have policies that are very supportive of ethanol consumption there. For example, in Canada, you've had clean fuel regulations take effect, and you've had some provinces that have changed their regulations on renewable fuels in ways that have been helpful. The United Kingdom, they went to a 10% ethanol or E10 standard a couple of years ago, and that's really lifted consumption and the level of shipments into the UK. And so we think this is something that can continue going forward in future years. When you look at the competitiveness of U.S. ethanol and you look at the greenhouse gas savings that it offers, that's something that is in demand worldwide.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We've already found ourselves in a situation where we're feeding hay. We've been dealing with some dry weather.
Dr. Mark Johnson is Oklahoma State University beef breeding specialist.
The good news story is that hay inventories are pretty adequate. It looks like at this point, we've even got some carryover hay from last year. But it is the point in time to be securing that hay supply for the winter. And what we're going to work through today can help us to know if we've got adequate hay inventory or if we need to be contracting for more to get our cows on through. There's three things fundamentally that we need to know in order to make this estimate. One, what is the average mature cow weight in our herd? We're going to learn that from weighing our 4 to 7 year old cows whenever we wean calves off of them. That's going to give us an adequate representation of the cows from 2 to 12 across the herd. And from that average weight, we can make a good estimate of how much hay a cow needs to consume each day or how much she's going to need to consume over time. Along with that, we want to estimate, or not estimate, but actually get an inventory of the amount of cows that we're going to be taking through the winter. And the third thing we need to know, what is our expected duration of time that we're going to be feeding hay? Like I said, a lot of operations are already on hay. I know we are at my house. So we're just going to take a look at this over the next 200 days as we go from, say, mid-October, well into the month of May, a 1,400-pound cow herd and 100 such cows to work through an example of what we actually need. So, at 36.4 pounds of hay a day, 100 cows are going to consume about 3,640 pounds of hay. Now, along with that, we need to take into account all of each bale is not going to be consumed. Cows are going to waste or lay on a good percentage of that hay, and all of each bale is not going to be totally good. We're going to deal with some spoilage in those bales. The good news story, if we're talking about hay that got baled in the summer of 2024, because of our drought, we're not going to see as much spoilage in those bales. If we're going back to feeding hay from the summer of 23, we're probably dealing with a healthier amount of spoilage. But for the sake of our example, we're going to bump up by 10% that 3,640 pounds of hay we need on a daily basis to take that up to around a ton per, 4,000 pounds or 2 tons a day that we know we're going to need to feed those cows. So if we need 4,000 pounds of hay a day, we're going to be feeding that hay for 200 days. That's 800,000 pounds of forage dry matter we're going to need from now until next May. If we put that on a ton basis, that's 400 tons of hay that we're going to need to feed. Now, I encourage producers, if possible, buy hay by the ton, and that leads to a little less error in these calculations. If you're buying hay by the bale, we need an accurate representation of what each of those bales actually weigh, and a good estimation of how much spoilage there is in each bale, which we'll get a feel for once we actually start to feed the hay. So we know that stage of gestation, wet cows or dry cows, and weather is going to impact the daily nutritional needs of a cow herd. So along with this forage dry matter requirement that we think about on a daily basis, we're going to have to add some supplemental feed in to accommodate weather, stage of gestation, and we know those cows are going to need more energy, particularly more protein, once they actually calve at some point later in the spring. And that's another layer to this management mix that we've got to add in at some point along the way. So estimate your hay needs. Think about the amount of time you're going to be feeding hay. I know it's a tough time in Oklahoma right now, but it sounds like there's still a lot of hay in the country. Be securing that hay supply and get ahead of the management curve.
Learn more online, sunup.okstate.edu. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Falling crop prices, shrinking profit margins, or no profits at all. This has been the trend since 2022. So when is this going to turn around?
And it's a tough question. I mean, it's a natural question, but it's a tough question. And I don't have a good answer.
But we'll take this answer anyway from USDA's chief economist, Seth Meyer. He says in years when farm income turns really good,
what happens is you get this confluence of forces which add a shock and give you a short price run until the market resolves itself, right? Whether that's a series of combined supply shocks from weather around the world, or whether it's a war, or whether it's some other event that comes along and knocks us off this path of narrow margins. So I don't know how long it's going to last. But if you look back in time, these narrow margin periods are more common than 2022 type years by far.
Meyer says that's why smart producers set aside money during the good times to have when times are not so good. Gary Crawford, Washington.